And our Pacifica stations are all members?
Are they? I don't know that.
Well, I've seen BAI representatives at the one of the tenants, conferences I went to, as well as KPFA. I don't remember. Many years ago, I think all the stations sent representatives once for a major Memphis gathering.
Right, and it may have been that we were the occasion of having a user group that happened to be at that meeting. We invite anybody, you do not have to be a DEI member to show up at one of our user group meetings. And so just the fact that Pacifica Station showed up. I remember, what was it, Terry, maybe 3 years ago? There was quite a turnout of Pacifica Stations, especially BAI people.
And you must have offered free travel.
That doesn't mean that they had to be DEI members to come to our meeting. Any member stations invited. So, but they have a website, DEIWorksite.org, if you want to look into them a little more.
Mm.
Okay. That's all one word, DEIWorksite.org.
All right, let's go on down the list. Next, I have Bill.
Just kind of clarify, it sounds like we're going to probably have to get together and come up with exactly what criteria we want, but and we may even have some differences between stations that sounds like that we didn't know about. But I just want to make sure that Nick's clear what some of the problems are, and I do appreciate your being on the call, Nick. Part of the problem is that when we have elections, some people are getting ballots who shouldn't. Some people are not getting ballots who should. Some people get more than one because they're in the database with slightly variants of their names and things like that. Besides paying $25 in the last 12 months, somebody can also become a voting member by donating time to the station. That has to be entered separately, too. So we need to make sure we get the criteria right so that when our election supervisor exports whatever subset of the database they use, they get the right records. Because it could be based on some combination of when they donated last or how much they totally donated over the last 12 months plus time that they put in.
Well, we have a Memphis user on the line. Terry, when it comes to someone who qualifies because they donate time, is there a way that you represent that in the database?
We pretty much stopped tracking that in Memphis. Our volunteer coordinator has a separate database, which is simply an Excel sheet, really. And, so he compiles that list as, and then there's yet another list of our volunteer programmers, which is separate from that. And so those are all sent separate from the main listener sponsor list. And so it's been up to the Central Elections Committee or whatever mail house they use to incorporate all those lists and then look for duplicates or call out any duplicates. Within our own database, certainly there's all kinds of, there is that duplicate detect function, which works very well, but there are times when, someone will call up and use a given name one time, and then they'll call up another time and give us their nickname, and we don't know that those are different people, and we think we have two valid voters at the same address. Stuff like that, it's really tough to weed out.
Well, and people are not that careful. Like, as you say, they're casual about how they identify themselves, and there's no perfect science when it comes to deduping because people are mucking up the database. People, meaning donors, are mucking you up all the time with information that is fuzzy, as you just said.
Right.
I'm just kind of, backing up what you said. And we do have the match key system in place, which once we added that to the deduping report, I think it made it a much more concentrated, useful report.
Mm-hmm.
But it still takes proactively running it and then doing something about the dupes.
Can you explain what the match key is, how it works?
Okay.
In simple terms.
The match key is a table whose job is solely to identify people by information such as their name, the numerals from their address, their zip code, their phone number, their email address, elements that help in searching. And a given donor could have one, maybe five, or even, I believe the maximum is 19 match keys because of the different information that might be in their record. And those match keys are used by the routines we have in MEMSIS that have to try to find a member not knowing the account number. And that includes different processes.
In other words, sorting.
Sorting and searching, basically.
Right.
A good classic example is importing website pledges, where you do not receive a record that contains any account number, but you have their name, address, maybe a phone number, and maybe their email address. So when we do a web import, we take that information from the web pledge and we format into what are called match keys. And then we have this database already in MEMSIS for all the donors with their match keys. And we use it for matching up the web pledge with one of the existing donors. Okay. So it's if I use the term fuzzy finding, that might be a good way to describe it. Is it's using anything, everything you've got that could be helpful, minus having the account number, to try and find a member. And that's what our web import does, and that's also what the, we have a report in MEMSIS that searches for suspected duplicates, and it uses that match key table as well.
So that, if I can follow up on that, so once the that search function comes up with suspected duplicates, then what's the next step?
Well, you use that printout to make a judgment call about whether a given pair are duplicates to be merged or there's some good reason that they aren't duplicates.
Okay, so it checks for a variety of criteria like same address,
right,
or same last name but different first name. Or...
Right, it's usually combinations of information like the last name plus the first initial plus the five-digit zip code. That's one of our match keys. Or first initial, last name, phone number. That kind of thing. It's never one thing. It's one field like a name or an address element combined with something else.
Okay.
So we have that in the system, and I believe all five stations are current enough that they're all using it. And they can all practice a discipline of running that suspected dupe report and merging the duplicates.
Okay, Carolyn on the stack here. You're taking a stack.
Okay, yes. Yeah, actually, you're next, Carolyn. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Some people have gotten two or three ballots. Does that mean that there isn't enough matching going on, or is it some other cause? I mean, this is a real problem, and what you describe also leads me to another problem, and that is how people pay. Some people have donated money for other people, and I think we have an informal rule that it's okay to do it like for a spouse or a sibling at the same address, but no more than that because California doesn't allow gift memberships. So is there a field, or could we make one, that records the way the membership is paid for, whether it's cash or credit card or voluntary hours or a different person? Could we note in the field that it was paid for by a different person?
Well, within one account, no. The account is the account. You're saying someone would make a donation in order to qualify someone else to vote?
Yes, right. Uh-huh. So, I mean, some people have gone so far as to turn in a list of other people with a check. You know, obviously they're in an election list. It's, you know, padding the ballot list, which is illegal on another level. But there's no such thing as a gift membership. We just wanted to make sure that some people are paying for themselves or some people are not buying a whole lot of gifts.
The basic donor record has room for a primary name and an optional spouse name, or basically any second individual name, and that's it. And that's within the main donor record. that wouldn't be the same thing as the second name wouldn't be a gift subscriber. They're just a second name on that same membership.
Right.
I remember when I was asked to write the election list generating program years ago, that the criteria was 25 or more for one name, but if there were two names in the donor record, and $50 had been posted in the 12 months, that qualified both names. So
right. That's how our bylaws state it. Yeah,
that's okay. I was asking about something else. So if somebody's name comes in and they're one of a batch of names that somebody else has donated money for, is there any way to tell that somebody else is paying for them who is not that other person, that one other person?
You're saying like a person donates $250 and hands you a list of 10 names?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, is that kosher? Is that
no, it's not. No, definitely not.
Well, this is not something that Memphis would just naturally be able to track. So, I mean, doesn't it take due diligence on the part of your staff to say, I'm sorry, you can't do that?
Yes.
That's the only way is what you're telling us. That's my question.
Nick, this is Bob. I worked for a while in the premiums and membership area, and there is a field on MEMSIS for billing address. So if somebody used a credit card to pay for a different person, then they would the person who paid for it has to give their billing information, and that would show up in the record. Isn't that your understanding of how it works?
A lot of people have different billing addresses than their home address. I do.
Yeah, but George, you don't have 25 different billing addresses.
Right.
Bill.
Right.
There's fields in each individual pledge record to track an optional alternate billing address. Just one. I don't know if that helps. And that is it's presumed not to be the main donor address. So when you pull your election file, if you're pulling from the main donor address, you're not even looking at that other address.
Could you search for 25 people billed to the same address?
We could write a routine that would look for patterns like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Could be a plot building.
Are you saying that some people are slamming in additional records when they shouldn't for the purpose of the election?
We have had some people try. I don't know how many people have succeeded because the ones we've tried we were able to stop. But yes, we've had that happen.
Oh, okay.
This is Bill.
Okay.
Bill. Yeah.
Yeah. A related question. I know it's happened here at KPFT. Is that we gift memberships are fine as far as we're concerned. You don't get to vote because of that. And we have had cases where somebody, they make a donation for their one of their parents or a brother or something like that. They get on our email list and our postal list, and so we can send them memberships, renewals, and say, would you like to join? And we've had people who first started out as a gift member, so they couldn't vote. Then they did become a full member, but yet somehow in the database it was flagged as a gift membership, and they didn't get a ballot. And then they got really pissed off, and they stopped donating completely. I mean, that's – so it wasn't done in order to – I mean, it can be done in order to, pad the voter rolls with people who aren't qualified, but it could also – the opposite could also happen. We could have people who start out as a non-voting member because of gift memberships, and then they become a regular member by donating themselves, but we need a way of – yeah, identifying that. Is there a field that could be used for that? So, apparently it's been used somehow in our member database, but I don't know how they've done it.
Yeah, and I wouldn't know either. I mean, we provide so many options and so many code fields people could use. We have no control over how people use it.
So each station could have a field. They could designate a field saying membership donated by, and then what's the name there or something like that?
Well, ultimately, the question is, how was the list generated in the end? What was used to pull the list? We have no control over that. They could have used query. They could have used a mailing. We don't know what fields you're selecting on.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. The sense I'm getting is that you want to clamp down how these election lists are pulled. Is that true?
Well, that's...
Yes, and you're right, and data needs to be entered also, of course.
Right, but any one gift of 25 or more, or it qualifies one name in the account, any two gifts of 25 totaling 50 or more qualifies two names in the donor record. These are things that are always true as a matter of policy, is that right?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got that much nailed down. This is what I mean is what we could do is develop specifications for an audit that is used to pull the list. And that is what each of the five stations is to use to pull the list. That's what I mean by clamp down. So that they can't say, oh, well, I'm going to do a query and I'm going to pull on this field because my five friends over here have this code and I'm going to add them to them. You know, you don't want to give too much discretion to how the list is pulled.
Well, if I can follow up, because that makes sense, but in the case of the gifts that we're talking about, that would require, I guess, what would be a new field to be created, saying gift from so-and-so, some third party, and then anyone who's marked as a gift from someone else would be excluded from the voter rolls unless, as in Bill's example, they had later paid on their own behalf, and then that field would be erased somehow.
Right. What I'm saying is in an audit situation, either the account has those gifts in it or it doesn't. If it's a gift subscriber only, they don't typically, a gift subscriber record in MEMSIS would not have any payments. And if presence of those payments posted in the last 12 months are the core criteria for pulling the list, they'd be left out. And isn't that what I'm hearing that you want?
Right, but I guess if I can just follow up, because the confusion I'm having is when you say it wouldn't show any payments, it wouldn't show any payments by the person whose address is listed as the member, but somebody's paying on their behalf. So where is that information stored, the address of the person who wrote the check?
The payments, the paid pledges exist in the account of the donor making the gifts.
Oh, okay.
The gift subscriber typically has no gifts in their history.
I see. So you're saying the way the system is already configured, that should be distinguished? Current giftees should not be listed as a paid member?
That's right. That's correct. The way MEMSIS was designed and the way we document how to set up gift subscribers, the gift subscriber technically is a donor record, but it has no payment.
Okay, this is a problem because I don't think it's worked that way, and we shouldn't have any gift memberships at all. They shouldn't even be in the database. Maybe they should be in a separate list and then ask them to be contacted and say, if you'd like to be a member, somebody donated $25, but it doesn't matter. That's what Les Radke said we had to do. We have to write them and say, please donate $25 in your own name, because you are not yet a member. So
right.
This is a problem. I mean, it's a political problem as well as a financial one.
Yosh Verstack.
Wait, am I right in hearing you say that it is correct on the face of it that a gift subscriber with no money of their own, they don't get the vote?
Correct.
Okay, so MEMSIS is supporting you in that if used as documented. But what I'm also hearing you say is that you get some people that they really think they should have a vote and becomes a PR problem?
Well, no, not quite, because what Bill was saying was somebody who then later decides, oh, now I would like to pay money on my own behalf and therefore acquire the right to vote. And,
right.
And then he's describing how somehow, despite what you're describing as the factors in MEMSIS that should distinguish it, that it wasn't distinguished, and the result is that person never did get their ballot, even though they were, at that point, became entitled to get a ballot.
We're starting to get pretty granular in looking at individual
right.
accounts that might have
right.
gone wrong. But anybody with qualifying payments, just the tools, let me back up a second. Again, I come back to the basic financial criteria of 25 plus to qualify one name in the account, or 50 plus in 12 months, last 12 months, to qualify both names in the account.
Right.
Does that still hold as a basic specification?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, it's sounding like what I wrote years ago would still work.
It seems to me it worked. This is Terry.
Go ahead, Terry.
You know, I can say that, yeah, it was a query that we would run, and it would only select on, as Nick said, that very specific criteria based on the dates and the cumulative amounts that were given between those dates. And
I remember writing something custom. I thought it was more than just a query, but I have to go back and investigate.
If you wrote a custom program, that was never forwarded to me, but there was a query that got sent around, and I find that does just what we needed to.
Okay. So if you could run that and be confident that the list was deduped in an aggressive way, would Terry, would you feel what you have now gives you the ability to generate the qualified list?
Yeah, that's what I've been using throughout this process, and definitely
okay.
I have full confidence in it.
Okay.
I have a question, if I may, Carolyn, on the staff.
Sure.
Well, Yosha's next, and then I'll come back to you, Carolyn.
Please.
Thank you. I just wanted to go back to the printout of suspected duplicates, and I'm wondering how frequently that report should be generated and how arduous it would be to generate that report?
Well, if a station hasn't used it in a long time, they'd want to run it right away, I think, uh-huh. and really put some people on merging the duplicates. We actually have some tools that are ancillary to MemSys. They know they're, Terry, they're like the little custom programs I could ship. And what it's able to do, one of them, turns the report into an Excel spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can just go through the spreadsheet comparing the names and addresses and marking one of the columns. Yes, to be merged, no, not duplicates, et cetera. And then I have another program that reads that file and batch merges them.
Okay.
And that takes a lot of the legwork out of doing the job.
Uh-huh.
But then... That's to sort of play catch-up when you have a daunting list of dupes. I have no idea how many you would get if you run it at each of the five stations, but if it's a long list, we do have some tools that are available, and I could deal individually with any one of the support contacts
okay.
at the stations and run those tools to expeditiously clean up the dupes. Secondly, once you've done that, then... You know, it's a matter of just weeding the garden, as it were. And you're going to pick up the greatest number of dupes during each pledge drive when the volume of gifts increases. So we have a way to run that report where you just limit the search to donors who had a gift in a particular source code. But again, these are all tools that we put in their hands, but someone has to get in there and use them.
Right. And do you know if any one of the five stations are using those tools at this point?
Well, they'd have to speak for themselves. Terry, what do you guys do?
Well, we used the basic. We didn't use any extra beyond what's in MemSys already. So the search duplicates function, we
right.
certainly ran that before compiling our list. And then, and additionally, I did generate a list using those queries, which was provided to our elections supervisor, who scanned through. You know, it was a printout of many, many pages, and you know, they went through all of those and manually looking for matches. And
Terry, do you think that
call to verify?
I'm sorry. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Terry. Did they phone to verify? In other words, Daniel and Don, father and son who live at the same address and both have D. Smith, would ordinarily come up with a duplicate.
Uh-huh.
Would you not phone to verify whether, in fact, it was the same person or two different people?
Are you asking if the election supervisors did that or if we do that routinely?
When you get the dupe list, that would be what you would have to look at before I ever went to the election supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
And then one thing with 10 people at the same address, it could be a fraud, one of those things where one person gave you 10 phony names and they all come to the same address. On the other hand, it could be an apartment building with a lot of
people. You have to have a name. There's only room for two names in the donor record. Oh, you're saying different donor accounts.
Correct.
At the same
time. In other words, if you have 10 donors all at the same address, it could be that they all live in an apartment building, and that's reasonable, or it could be that one person gave you, 20 different names, paid for them, but they all come to his address so that when the ballots come, he'll get all the ballots and can vote them.
Yeah,
$2,500, I can put in 100 new names and shift an election considerably.
Yeah, that's kind of an extreme example there, and I would say that no, we haven't.
I haven't had
any instances like that. We have like family memberships where there'll be people wanting their sons and daughters' names. And there might be five names crammed into an account where there should only be two. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to be. Then they'll say, well, save on your mailing costs. Don't send us more than one piece of mail to the same address.
No, Terry, what I was getting at is you put in a search to find all the names that print the addresses out. You search on address,
mm-hmm.
and then you'll get all the addresses as your prime search target, and you'll find, okay, you got six people all at this address. You have 26 people all at that address.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you, if I wanted to spend $2,500, I could make up 20. I can make up 100 names and send in the money, each with a check, and then I would get 100 ballots at my address, and I could vote them all in the next election. So
right.
What you would do is, if you search on addresses, you'd find, hey, we've got 20 people at this address, 100 people at this address. Let's see if it's maybe a gigantic apartment building, or if it's not, then we've got a problem there, and that would be a phone call.
Well, anytime we do a mailing, I export it from Memsys into another program called Smart Mailer, which is supposed to standardize the addresses and also give us postal discounts. And so, if we saw multiple records at the same address, they'd certainly show up then. So that's not something I'm seen much concern for.
Harry, step into the shoes of the person trying to slam the election who has deep pockets. How are they going to present that stuff? I mean, they can't send in one huge check with a list of names.
Mm-hmm.
That jumps right off the page as what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
You don't see that kind of thing happen, right?
No.
Yeah, so they would have to...
Or if I did, I'd be suspicious.
To pull it off and not catch anybody's eye at the point of initially posting it, they would have to make the rounds and... Well, you're saying make up a bunch of names. They'd have to just keep joining under a different name, sending in individual gifts for the 25.
No, what they would do? No, that's not correct. I used to have a fraud division. What you would do is get 100 friends who have no, and say, here's $25. Join and give this as your address.
Okay.
And they would send in. They would send in their own check with my address. So you'd have 100 different names, but you'd have the same address. You'd never pick that up.
Okay.
As anything fraudulent.
Okay. So that the one person gets all the ballots.
Bob,
right.
I want to call your attention to the fact that we only have about 5 minutes left in our hour.
Oh, thank you, Yosh. Okay.
It'd be easy for me to write a report that would look for instances of people having the same match key. And, that's kind of what the search dupes does now. But... we could use those match keys in other ways with some custom reports, such as reports that aren't sensitive to the name. We have at least one or two that are things like the numerals from the address combined with the zip code and the phone number, where the name doesn't enter into it at all. That's one of our match keys.
That sounds good.
And the reason we invented it, of course, was something totally different, is people whose spelling is so bad or the data entry person couldn't read their handwriting and mangled their name, you still have a chance of finding them.
Right.
And so there's some non-name sensitive match keys in the set, and we could look for multiple instances of hitting that. I mean, this is an idea.
Well,
if you really want to drill down into the database and look for these type of things.
Or you simply do a search by address, period.
Correct. If you suspect a particular address, hey, all you have to do, and Terry knows, you can just type in the leading part of the address and hit the search key, the F8 key, and Terry, you would see everybody in address order.
That's right.
Yeah, so, I mean, that if you suspect a particular address, it's easy to find the duplicate hits.
Okay, as Yosh said, we really only have about 5 more minutes with Nick, so is there anyone who hasn't asked a question yet who wants to participate?
Well, I have to come back to, I'm clear about the financially based specs, but what about that wrinkle of people who donate time? Terry, how do you deal with that?
Well, again, I don't even track those in MEMSIS anymore.
That's right, it's outside the system, that's right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. You know, my main thought
is it a large number?
I'm sorry?
Is it a large number?
It's probably 600 to 700 names over the course of a year.
It's a large number.
Yeah.
How many hours of work is the equivalent of $25?
3 hours a year.
Oh, okay.
So let me ask, I'll wait till Nick is off the phone.
I could describe a way to track that in MEMSIS. That we could then make part of the search. But we don't have time to get into it now, but I could put it in a follow-up email.
That would be very useful. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. So last chance for people, anyone, whether you have or have not spoken yet tonight, to ask Nick a question.
Well, Carolyn, if no one else is going, but I've already spoken. Nick, I'm back to the gift membership things. I know Bill described a scenario where to convert gift memberships into paying members, but actually we shouldn't have any gift memberships on our list at all. But let's assume they're on there and somebody wants to mark them as paid. Can they do that? You said the donor gets the credit for paying somebody, but let's say the donor sends in some gifts and a check and the person doing the data entry decides to mark that person paid. Is there any reason, any way to stop someone entering the data from marking the gift membership as paid?
Well, if it started life as a gift membership and the money is actually in someone else's account, and then the payment entry person calls up the gift subscriber and now posts their own gift to that same account, essentially converting it into a paid donor, MEMSIS would not stop them from doing that. But they are a paid donor at that point, so don't they qualify?
Well, if someone, let's say someone sends in 10 names and checks for 250, and the person doing the data entry enters the 10 names and marks each of them paid, is that possible?
The gift subscribers?
Yeah.
Well, let's define mark them paid. When you post a pledge that's paying for someone's gift subscription, there's a recommended way we describe for how to set that up. When the gift comes in credited to the person paying for it, it activates a gift subscriber. Now, that means they get a Renew Your Mo. They're supposed to be type-coded to identify them as a gift subscriber, and which is just type code G. But no payment or paid pledge ends up in that record's history. But they, if the benefits of being a subscriber are based on selecting on the Renew Your Mo, they still get those benefits, but someone else paid for it. But again, if the election poll is based on needing to find money in the history, they will be skipped. So it takes actually having a donation in your own account to have a chance of being polled for the election list if we're pulling it the way that we've been talking about.
All right, so back to my question, then, if someone entering the data could just decide to mark them as paid,
the only way to have that affect the election would be to post a phony pledge.
Okay.
In history. And
check the bank
MEMSIS
account.
Can't stop them from doing that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You have to check your bank records to make sure that you have enough money to cover every person supposedly.
Well, somewhere there's enough money. There's a check for $250, and there are 25 names labeled gifts, and somebody says, okay, these are paid for by somebody, and marks them paid. Evidently, that's possible, right?
Well, with a lot of extra work.
Terry, you know, our pledge record only supports one gift subscriber per pledge, so they would have to sit there and create 10 pledges and create all these gift subscribers, but then again, Mm-hmm. If you're pulling based on finding money, it's going to skip the gift subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
You'd actually have to create them as paid donors, not gift subscribers.
I think that's probably right.
And, you know, mm-hmm. and so again, we come down to intent and due diligence.
Mm-hmm.
Memphis
Thank
could
you.
Not stop them from doing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Nick. That's very helpful.
Okay, good.
Right. Okay, last call.
Is there something in following up to this?
Yes.
There's something more you want from me? Do you want, I don't know, suggestions on specifications for, you know, how we might modify a program to pull the list? I mean, I kind of have a pretty clear understanding of how the list should be pulled. And Terry said that the tool I gave out, you know, it was a query, right? Does the job.
Well, I think the one thing we've all agreed on is to write the script so that the definition of membership is redefined so that it conforms to the bylaws as far as any $25 donation within the preceding 12 months, that whole thing.
Jerry, I'm wondering if the query is robust enough to handle any 12-month period. It's been so long, I can't remember how it was scripted, but...
I kind of think so. I think, you know, because we plug in whatever date range you want. You know, when we first were tasked to do this, you know, it was kind of frustrating because we have all these built-in reports that will report on fiscal year or calendar year. And I thought, well, why couldn't they make the qualifying period either of those? And then when someone went to you asking for a query and you came up with that as a workaround, and I think it works fine. It's not as automated as some people may like.
Terry, because of the time that's elapsed since that happened,
mm-hmm.
could you fire me off an email with that script as an attachment?
Yeah, certainly.
I just want to remind myself what the specs were.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Bonnie.
Go ahead, Bonnie.
But it's not any 12 months. It's the 12 months preceding the record date.
Of June.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So June to June.
The set period. It doesn't float based on when the subscription came in.
So is it July to June 30th every year?
They've just switched the dates, and I'm sorry, I can't remember if it's
It's not that you don't remember. It's that the new amendment gives discretion to the election supervisor to set the record date within a 2-week period.
Oh.
So. That we won't know that till we hire someone in, you know, next spring.
Mm-hmm.
But it's somewhere around, I think it's between June 1st and June 15th. And it's not every year. It's two. Our elections are only 2 out of every 3 years.
Okay.
But wouldn't it be simpler to have an ongoing script that would be uniform at all times? It would simply be that you're a member as long as the bylaw said, as long as in the 12 months preceding a given moment, you've given at least $25. So, because there are technically other things that could happen that would trigger an election, like you know, a recall or a voter referendum. So it seems like it should just be a simple ongoing principle that membership is determined based on you donate a day X, and then 12 months after day X, unless you make another donation, it expires. If you do make another donation, then it's 12 months from that later donation, et cetera.
I disagree with that. I think it should be like a magazine subscription, just tagged on
to
the end.
Well, let's deal with that after.
Well, I do have one more question, though, because Nick asked if we wanted anything, and I'm wondering, since the question has come up, Nick, do you have a contract with the national office? I mean, or would we be asking you questions based on individual station needs? I'm not too sure.
Well,
how we would be billed for this is what I'm asking.
Well, let's see. I believe I got an email on how to invoice for this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not at my office. I'm working from home right now.
Uh-huh.
But I thought I saw something indicating how to invoice for this.
Well, one of my questions was if you had a separate contract in addition to the five stations with the national.
I
you don't. Okay.
I only have, it's like the owner of software, you know. I have
uh-huh.
Nations individually have licenses to use MEMSIS, and I have annual service contracts with them. And that's it as far as anything formal.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, I think we'll thank you very, very much, Nick, for spending so much time with us and being very thorough in answering our questions. Really
happy to help.
Really
absolutely
helpful.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Okay, and Terry, can you hang on for one, just a little
bit? Yeah, and I'll ring off now.
Okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
Right.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Everybody, thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so it's 10:25, and we normally adjourn at 10:30. Do people want to talk tonight or defer to the next meeting? This question of defining when the membership period ends and when it's extended and all of that. What's the preference?
I am Steve Brown. Why don't we take this period between now and the next thing and think about our different options and then be ready to talk about it at the next session?
Okay,
I don't think we'll finish tonight if we start.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, because it seems like there's at least two options on the floor. Maybe someone has a third option. And if we circulate them by email, that might make for a clearer conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Can I suggest making somebody point person on that? Because I think maybe a few of us would like to work on that. But maybe Steve could take point on that and circulate the emails.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Would you be willing to take point on that and sort of organize the discussion so we can come up with something coherent in a few weeks?
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, but, you know, anyone should feel free to write their thoughts on this topic and just send it to the listserv, and then we can, you know, we can have a few options on the table and make a decision based on that. Are there any, before we adjourn, let's just see if there are any, while it's fresh in our mind what Nick said, and also while Terry's still with us, are there any last points that people, not on this topic that we've postponed, but on the other aspects of our conversation that people want to reflect on, or is there still a question that maybe Terry could help us with?
Actually,
I'm sorry, Terry, I did have a question about this question of the two separate lists.
Mm-hmm.
Volunteer list and the paid membership list.
Mm-hmm.
Is the reason that you've kept them separate just that they were already separate and it would be a large administrative task and time-consuming to enter it into MEMSIS, or is it that you weren't sure that MEMSIS could accommodate a non-paying member?
Well, it's developed that way because we now have a volunteer coordinator who is separate from this department. And basically, he gets all that information and does his own mailings and contacts. And at this point, you know, since we don't send out program guides as we used to, we felt like, well, there's not really that much point in incorporating the volunteer list into the main membership list. We used to do that when this department essentially handled whatever volunteer outreach was going on. You know, so now it's just it does seem like extra work to take on for very little return.
Right. Well, one quick follow-up, and then I'll call on Bill. So do you know of any kind of quick conversion that MEMSIS could provide that in case it was decided that it was worthwhile to merge them without having to re-input all that data, which of course would be a nightmare, but if it could just be converted from the Excel file into...
May I make a suggestion? Because I had a situation like that.
Sure.
Why not? We now give a membership, somebody who spent 3 hours, in other words, we attribute $8.33 to their hourly wage. If we simply took in the Excel spreadsheet every one of those names and put down a pledge of $25, because that's what we could judge the 3 hours to be, then those names could simply be imported into Excel as if they came from anywhere else, and MEMSIS would accept them as paid members.
Well, then you have the problem of justifying that against your bank statement.
The bank accounts, we'd make a note in the bank records. I mean, you have to make a notation, a memorialization of what you did, so that you could trying to rectify the bank records.
Yeah,
but
I don't think it has to even be that complicated. I mean, certainly you can take an Excel sheet and turn it into a comma delimited text file, and you can easily map the matching fields in MEMSIS. MEMSIS can import things just as you tell it, you know, what the fields are. And then we could just set up additional codes, user codes, saying, yeah, these are valid members, even though they haven't actually paid anything.
Okay, well, that's exactly what I was talking about. And the advantage would be you don't then have to do a separate deduping because it's now part of one unified database, and you can use the deduping within MEMSIS instead of between MEMSIS and an outside database. So it's one less step when it comes to election time that, you know, would expedite the process.
Terry, that sounds very scary, what you just said. You said, you know, you can create an Excel comma-separated database of 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 names and just export it or import it into MEMSIS saying these people are valid members. Is that what I just heard you say?
Right. We would have to trust our person, yeah.
It was a question to Terry.
Yeah, I mean, you can, MEMSIS is designed, you can import prospects, you know, if you want to do cold mailings to people. I mean, it's a fundraising database. So, yeah, the same thing as Nick was talking about earlier, importing web pledges.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's the way to avoid a lot of extra work. Then you'd be faced with matching the volunteer list up with, you know, volunteers who are actually already paid members. And, you know, I assume that gives, if they've actually paid, then that status takes precedence over their volunteer status, so then you'd have to eliminate a record or merge the record.
Right, you'd merge them, but that's easier than what it sounded like has been happening now, is that the election supervisor manually sits and compares the two lists, which is bound to produce errors, versus MEMSIS, which has a very good merge or, you know, dupe function and
mm-hmm.
then a merge function.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, you know, much more, in a much more automated and fast way, get rid of duplicates.
Mm-hmm.
And Yosh, I'm not sure what your concern is, because these are people who, under the bylaws, are absolutely qualified to be members. So there's nothing untoward about putting all of those names into the database, into the MEMSIS database.
Well, a member
is a member. I mean, you know, as long as it doesn't suggest they paid money when they didn't.
No, Bob, my concern is that, okay, right now, KPFK, we have a volunteer coordinator, and he tracks his 600 or 700 volunteers. You know, if I were the volunteer coordinator and I wanted to add another 600 or 700 names, I just enter names, addresses, phone numbers, et cetera, and say, here, Terry, here are my 1,400 volunteers. Please merge them with MEMSIS and send out ballots. And anyway,
but they could do that now.
Yeah, well, that's...
I mean, if the person's dishonest, there's nothing you can do. I mean, this is based on a certain level of trust of your employees. I mean, the current system, it just happens to be kept separate, but if someone wanted to phony up hundreds of names, theoretically they could, but...
Yeah.
You know, assuming they're not doing it now, then they're not going to be more able to do it if the two were merged.
Right. No, I'm just putting it out there as some paranoid ideation.
It isn't paranoid, and I'll send us all something confidentially on the list about this. Yosh's suspicions are well-founded.
Now, I have a similar related question for Terry.
Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
I just sort of see a nightmare waiting to happen come next elections here at KPFT. I think we have a really competent development director who used to be our membership coordinator. We have a membership coordinator who's been here for most of this year. She was trained by our previous development coordinator. So they're both using MEMSIS, I assume, and I think they're real familiar with it. Okay, but then we've got a volunteer coordinator, another person, who doesn't know how to use MEMSIS and says he's had trouble trying to learn how to use MEMSIS. I don't know if it's because of lack of documentation. He's kind of not a computer person or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yet he's got his own, I think it's a spreadsheet, it's not really a database, of about 800, he says, volunteers. Somehow those are going to have to get merged with the other database before we send out the ballot. There's probably a lot of duplicates. I'm not even sure he has kept track of. I think he's tried to keep track of when they donate time and things like that. But is there? I don't know what your feeling is about if there's easy ways of getting that kind of data into MEMSIS and getting it deduped, so we don't have a big huge crunch at just before elections. And then also the other related question is, we're always having turnover personnel and stuff like that, and other stations too, perhaps. Do you feel like there's maybe a training issue, or do we need to get you and the other membership coordinators of various stations together to help each other out and make sure everybody knows, now you're familiar with it. I'm not sure everybody else knows all these different ways of doing the different things, like for Suchi, deduping and that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, you don't have to import the volunteers into MEMSIS. You can export records from MEMSIS and combine them with this is essentially what the mailing house does anyway. You can combine them in an outboard program like Access or even in Excel and pretty easily see if there are duplicates there.
Just manually going through it.
Since Excel will sort stuff in any order you want, that's a pretty easy way. And Access, if you are a little more sophisticated, Access will, has a dupe detect function.
Carolyn here, if I may.
Yes.
One question we didn't get around to asking was training. I don't know what the contracts that Nick has with the stations provide for, but I know he has done training at the National Supervisor's request, I think 1 or 2 years running, so perhaps the new people at the stations could be required to take some training in this. Is that a solution to the problem Bill brings up?
Well, I'm hoping so. I'm still not sure what happened. For example, when people were somehow in their database, they had them flagged as a skipped membership. I mean, it sounds like Nick doesn't know how that was entered. But so I know of at least one person personally I know who was a had a gift membership. She converted it to a paid membership. She didn't get a ballot. And this was the election before last. But all the problems. All it takes is just a few cases like that, and then they get repeated, and everybody gets upset because they feel whether I don't think there was anybody trying to keep her from voting, but that's the way she felt. And everybody she talked to then they knew how she felt too.
Yeah, but isn't that a very simple thing? If she sent in her individual donation after she was gifted, shouldn't that be entered in MEMSIS as here's another 25?
Right.
It should have been recorded in her account, and there would be money there. So that sounds like operator error to me, either that the person didn't enter the payment properly or there was operator error in generating the list.
Well, that gets back to Carol's question about training. Do we need better training for people using it? I don't know. Is that easy to do, do you think?
Well, again, at one point, there were two training sessions set up. Les Radke required it, I think, the year that he was supervisor. And it didn't take at BAI because the person in charge did not want to do the training, but I think that the other stations did get trained. Now, maybe that should be an annual thing, but again, I don't know what's in the contracts. Perhaps each contract has a different requirement or allowance.
Well, Terry, what's happened at your station with training on MEMSIS?
Well, certainly when you get your initial MEMSIS installation, the training goes with that. Any subsequent trainings, as new people come in, you would pay extra for that. We have had couple of special training sessions recently in the past 3 years. So it's a judgment call on paying for their travel, their accommodations, and the time, a day or half a day of training, whatever. The problem with this process is it seems to me like it's it doesn't happen often enough, so people either forget about it or it seems more obscure. It's a little more complicated than the regular mailings we tend to do, like renewal mailings or pledge mailings. But it isn't that much more complicated. So I would think even just being talked through by phone should be adequate, or a remote, you know, via web tutorial. You know, so there's no travel involved, but a Memphis person could access your desktop and guide you through the different steps. That's another option, I think.
Well, this is Bill. I'd like to use the resources we have already. I mean, I'd rather, if you have the time, I'd rather you do the training for, say, some new person in another station than us having to hire somebody from Memphis to do it. And maybe you could do it over the phone with them, too. I don't know. You and other people who are experienced at Memphis, who we already have within Pacifica, that would be more cost-effective for the network as a whole. Plus, people might be less reluctant to call you up if they have a question than if they knew they were being billed by the minute by Memphis if they called for tech support.
Well, I think it might be productive for, you know, Nick made reference to a program which sounded like it was a little more ambitious than the query that I'm used to running. And if he could just create a custom program that would automate most of it, that may be the most cost-effective thing at this point. You know, once we tell him exactly what we're looking for, and, you know, he just comes up with another routine that is a hard-coded menu item, people will feel more comfortable about running that. And,
let me give an example of the kind of things. Say, I don't use them, but I can just give an example of the kind of things I can see that could go wrong. Let's suppose we have a fund drive, we collect, a few thousand donations, and that sometime later that's entered into Memphis. Say we'd import it. Well, what date gets recorded when they import? It's probably a training issue. Do they record the date it was imported or the date the person made the donation? It might not make a difference, but it might when you're looking at, you know, whether you're eligible to vote or not to get a ballot.
Well, it should be the date.
Or if you don't match up the right fields correctly.
Well, yeah, that's something you always have to be careful of. But certainly the posting date you use should be whatever would conform to your banking records, you know, as close to the actual deposit date as possible.
The date of receipt, then, not the date of the pledge.
Right, right. I mean, the date of the pledge is immaterial if there's no money that comes through then.
Right. And not the date of the import.
Right. Right. Now, there was some...
later.
Now, some...
like a month later.
Now, an issue that came up with, well, what if it's just postmarked by a certain date and the money is not actually deposited then? I think there was some allowance made for that in earlier elections. And so that's another issue to address, and that's you could fudge the date then of the, use the postmark date as the...
Yeah, but Terry, doesn't that cause a problem? I mean, you at least you have to have a separate field. You have to have a postmark field and then a date cleared field, because it's possible that the check could bounce.
Yeah, that's right.
And so you can't just say, postmarked, October 15th, and then if it bounces on October 20th or October 30th, then, it causes a problem. It could.
Yeah, well, so that becomes a policy decision.
Well, I'm this is Bill. I'm just concerned that we may need better training somehow within the network. I mean, even here we've got our volunteer coordinator has found he cannot use Memphis. It's too complicated for him to do. And nobody has time at the station or something to show him how to use it for just his own volunteer database. Not even talking about donations and stuff. So if he can't figure out how to use it, I'm wondering if there's other people at other stations that may have similar problems that are really using it for things that might affect our who get the ballot.
Is there a manual that Memphis issues?
It has lots of help screens contact-sensitive health screens along the way. There hasn't been a printed manual for quite a few years now, as I recall. Because when we had one, it was huge. It was like a 3-inch loose-leaf binder.
Why don't we ask Nick if he has a manual that he can send?
Well,
or actually, he probably has one in his PDF file, which you can probably get online and download.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so that's a good query. I think it probably exists. He could not. Mm-hmm. He had to train his own people. He probably does have a manual after all this time on PDF, and we should
mm-hmm.
ask him for it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe that he hasn't.
All right, folks. It's 15 minutes past the ending time, and I think we should wrap up. But it's clear that whatever manuals exist, that we're asking for some special additional scripts or pieces of software that will be unique to Pacifica. So there would have to be, I think, there would have to be at least some limited training on those new pieces, even if the person's already well-versed in MEMSIS. So I think that's something we should think about, how we can, suggest that to management. I mean, it's basically a managerial function, but we could certainly suggest it to management that may not have thought about the fact that the elections impact their membership staff in, requiring some extra procedures that they need to be well-versed in.
If we ask for new software, we will probably have to pay for it, and therefore we have a right to ask to be trained in it. So that will take care of itself.
Well, I'm not sure if I used the right word, Terry. Is what Nick was talking about as far as changing the definition of membership, is that software or is that something else?
Well,
we built that into the rules. We won't have to do anything. It'll be transparent to us.
Well, let me ask Terry because he does the job every day.
Well, okay. That you can certainly change the rules in MEMSIS. As he said, you can change the dates where the system will automatically interpret something as an additional gift or as a renewal or membership gift. That's already there. You can do that if you want. The tradition has been to think of membership as kind of an annual thing, and that's the way MEMSIS was originally constructed, and that's the basis for our renewal mailings and additional gift mailings, because the whole fundraising, our fundraising
sure.
efforts may be running at cross purposes with the whole membership for voting qualifications.
But I was just asking about Steve's last point, which is that this would be a software edition that would entitle us.
If it were a software edition,
that's why I'm asking. If it sounds to you like it's going to mean a new piece of software or just kind of adjusting the current rules.
It will be transparent to the user once the rules
The software issue would be, years ago we developed a custom program that we all use for when National requests our lists to be submitted to the Triplex for cleanup and also for potential trade with other organizations. So we have this custom routine where we specify, we don't even have to specify anything, just what date we're running it or something. And it's automatic. You just start it. And whereas the routine that was developed for generating the election lists is not as automated. You have to make some conscious decisions and think about things when you start to run it. It's not a hard-coded report. And so that's the kind of automation that was being talked about, that regardless of whether, that once you set the date range where qualifying payments are going to be counted, it'll just come up with that whether a person under the old model is interpreted as a current member or not. Their renewal date may be passed, but if they had $25 sitting in there that was interpreted as an additional gift, but it's in the date range, they're still going to be exported as a qualified voting member.
Okay.
And I think that's where the terminology gets
right.
confused.
Okay. Well, given the lateness of the hour, Terry, if it's possible for you to write a little memo about what you were just discussing as to kind of what the options are, how the change would be made, that would be really helpful to us, since some of us, including myself, lack a, you know, a kind of an in-depth grasp of the technical side of of how the change would be made.
Yeah.
That would help guide us as we then consider the different options for how to, you know, on a policy level, how to consider renewals. So that would be really great. All right. Well, unless there's anything burningly urgent anyone has to say, can we adjourn?
Yes, and thank you very much, Terry. Really,
yes, thank you so much, Terry. You've been really, really helpful.
Okay. Thank you.
And we may consult with you in the future. Okay, well, so we'll see everyone on November 10th, and thank you, everyone.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.